Good evening. This is the March 19th, 2025 meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board, the regular meeting. Okay. It's hard to read. I'll put it down here. Can you call for a quorum?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Board Member Donnelly. Board Member Dahlgren.
Here.
Board Member Gaudette Cross is not here. Board Member Nava.
I'm here.
And Chair Hill.
Here.
We have quorum.
That brings us to a moment of silence. If we observe that, please. With that, Board Member Dahlgren, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Start off, are there any members of the board that have any announcements?
I will be able to attend the next meeting on the combined.
Okay, that's on the 3rd?
Yeah, I already had planned vacation for that date.
Okay, I think you need to put that in writing to the city clerk.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for that. You can email Janine if she doesn't know already.
Yeah, when she was emailing us to verify if we're going to have a quorum, and I emailed her back and let her know that I wasn't available during those dates.
Okay. We should be good then.
Okay, I don't have any announcements. This brings us to the Public Works announcements. Director Qualick, do you have any announcements?
Yeah, I got a couple. Thank you. So first, at the last meeting, it was suggested that the PWAB members get a tour of the old wastewater treatment plant. We actually had a similar request come from some city council members. So we're going to be organizing those tours with you all. So appreciate your patience. Nothing's changed there, so you're not missing anything. But we should have that ready in the next month or two, Damaris. Yep. And then another big announcement is that our city engineer, Cindy Cecil, has announced her resignation from the city, which is a big loss for us. And she has been gracious enough to stay until we find a new city engineer or until the end of May, whichever comes first. So we really appreciate Cindy's contributions to the city. She's worked here just about a year. I think next week will be a year. It's unfortunate that she's leaving, and it'll be a big gap. And our next move then will be to open up a recruitment to fill that gap. And so wish us the best of luck, because engineers are very hard to find for cities, and we're all kind of fighting for the same pool. And most agencies in the county have vacancies. So wanted to put that out there. Other than that, I don't have any announcements.
That brings us to public comment. If there are any members of the public who wish to comment on things that are not on the agenda, this would be the time. Hearing not, AGP, do we have anybody in the queue that's wanting to comment?
There are no people in the queue right now.
Thank you. So we'll now move on to the consent agenda, and likewise ask if there's anybody in the audience would care to speak on the consent agenda. Doesn't appear so. AGP, anybody wishing to comment on the consent agenda?
There are no raised hands.
Okay, that brings us to the consent agenda. Anybody wish to pull one of these two items?
Yeah, that's pretty loud. I just wanted to mention in the minutes, it talked about when future items. It says in here that we get a tour of the old wastewater treatment plant. What I asked for was the water treatment plant down on Taxadero Road. And I listened back on the minutes, and it's exactly what I asked for. So I don't know if you could do that separately or if you want to do each one of these things. But I'd really like to see where the old desal building is and the new brine water reverse osmosis units are, that place.
Thank you for pointing that out and that clarification. We can correct the minutes. And in talking with Utilities Division Manager Hansen, it would be very easy to give a tour of that facility while we're doing the old wastewater treatment plant, since they are almost adjacent to one another.
That's all.
Are there any board discussions of the two items? I mean, this is pretty basic stuff here.
Sorry, for clarification, the old desal plant is adjacent to the old wastewater treatment plant? I haven't been there either.
Thank you for the question. It is almost adjacent. It's about 60 feet away from the perimeter of the wastewater treatment plant. And so the old desal plant is actually our reverse osmosis facility that we use when we're pumping groundwater.
Would we see it if we were going to the hazardous waste disposal on Saturdays?
Yes, you would pass by it on the left.
Perfect. Thank you.
So I move approval of the minutes.
I second it.
And just for a point of order, we'd be approving the whole consent calendar.
Okay. Correction.
Yes.
So who was the first, and who was the motion?
I made the motion, approve the consent calendar.
And Derek was second. Thank you.
Take a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 So carries. The next item are business items. These are two items, one to review the fiscal quarter one, quarter two reclamation facility quarterly reports. Is there a presentation for this?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, there is. It's coming up as we speak. Should be coming up. Sometimes it takes a second. Okay, try that again. Thank you, AGP. So as Chair Hill said, we are presenting on the WRF quarterly reports from fiscal year 25, quarters one and two together. The reason why they're together is, well, one, I was on paternity leave, and we wanted to change the format so that wasn't the highest priority when I came back in January. know for my time, but once we got to working on it, we put both reports together. And that's really the big story here. The big story is that we have a new format. So previously we had a 60, 70 page, sometimes quarterly report. And that made some sense for when we had a lot of construction activities going on. We had many, many contracts that were in play. And we no longer have that. We are now down to the recycled water component of the WRF program. So we don't want to keep reporting out the same data that doesn't change. And so we cut out a lot, and the goal was to keep the report transparent, but just really report the essential and relevant information to current project activities. So we are, I say only here, but it's really mostly including information about the water, or the recycled water project. There is a section at the end of the report where if there's other things that are happening in the project, like if we have updates about the brine line issue or anything else, we can put it there, which is not related to recycled water. But for the most part, that's going to be empty unless there's some new activities in those other components of the project. We did close out the Water Resources Center contract and the conveyance contract in early 2024. So, again, that's why it's not included in the reports. However, we still have the full WRF program budget in there, so you can still see that, not just recycled water. And we're mostly presenting on completed and ongoing upcoming activities. My big thing was, let's keep it to 4 pages, and we've done that. We're very proud of that, because it was tough at times deciding on what comes out, so we consolidated some things. We also ran it by the WRF subcommittee. We received generally positive feedback on that. We did add a couple of items based on their feedback. But just very quickly, is there any feedback on the format? Did you like the format? Do you have concerns about the format?
Less is always better.
Yeah, I found it helpful.
Agreed. Yeah, the structure is very easy to follow, and the highlighted and bold lettering really makes it easy to track where you are in the document.
So I was going to ask, since you were supposed to do this to save money, paying Corolla instead. So who put together these reports?
So it was done in collaboration with Corolla, Confluence, and city staff. Corolla still has some involvement with the finances, and they have to report that out to us. And for this first set, it took a few of us on a few calls to figure out exactly what we wanted to put in and where the numbers line up. I think in future ones, it'll require less involvement from our consultants and contract engineers. But this first set was a collaboration amongst the three parties.
So did it save us time and money by doing it?
It absolutely did.
Okay.
Yeah, because we have a lot less information now to figure out to report on.
Excuse me, your microphone.
Thank you. Is there any feedback on the content of the report, on any of the project activities, before I kick it over to Dan Heimel, who will go into some of those in detail, but not all of them?
I had a couple of questions. Just a comment. Can you speak to the pending funding that's available, and if we plan to tap that, and where it would be necessary?
It's a good question. We have two pending funding sources, arguably three, but let's talk about the two grants. One is a $9.3 million grant from the United States Bureau of Reclamation, and we have held that grant. Has it been 2 years yet where we were awarded the grant, and we just don't have a grant agreement yet We have consistently provided the Bureau with the information that they require, and then they ask for more information, and there's waiting periods, and we have meetings with them, but it's just been a long time coming. We have a different... So prior to us getting this grant, Soquel Creek got the same grant, very similar circumstances. Theirs was before us by a year or so. Yeah, and they were able to get a grant agreement, so there's no reason to believe why we shouldn't get it. It's just a procedural thing with the federal government. The second funding source that's pending is the county grant, and that's for $1.2 million. Similar situation. We've sent them what they need. I emailed the individual at the county who's responsible for processing our grant last week, and he said there is just one thing they need to figure out before they take it to the Board of Supervisors, and it is unrelated to anything that we've brought to them. So we don't know specifically what that is. Apparently, it's not something we can help them with, but the next step there is for them to take it to the Board of Supervisors and finalize it, and then we will have that money.
Also, the possible loan, there are several loans out that have funds available as well?
Yes, so we have several loans that are not fully spent out. We have the WIFIA loan, which is, I don't remember how many million right now off the top of my head, but, and we want to be strategic with whether and how we spend that money out. And then we also have the SRF amendment, which has around $21 million that we can access. And both loans have different terms. They have different rates. They have different requirements. And the City Council for the SRF amendment asked us to take a funding and financing strategy to the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee before we took out any of that debt. And so we did that, and it turns out they want to really get into the details of it, which will take some staff time to help them with that. And we have just decided to shelf that for the moment because we don't need the money right now. The project activities that we have currently, you know, we're not in construction right now. So we're not getting these huge invoices that need to be paid and reimbursed. We also have a healthy balance in the sewer fund. So it's in the neighborhood of $20 million. And so we're not too concerned in the immediate to pursue that or the WIFIA debt. And we're very hopeful that we'll get the $10.5 million in grants. So we don't actually expect to take out all the debt that we have available right now. So that's a long-winded answer, but that's kind of our thinking at the moment.
Thank you.
So on the federal money, since there's been so much refocusing going on in Washington, are we still guaranteed that money, or is it going to get clawed back?
It's a great question. Of course, nothing is guaranteed, and I would not want to say we have the money until we have an agreement that actually gives us the money. Our understanding from the Bureau is that executive orders from Washington have added another procedural step to getting the money. That is not the current step that we're on, and so that will be a later step. Our preliminary reading of the executive orders that may affect the grant is that those executive orders tend to focus on prohibiting projects that prohibit mining and drilling for resources like oil. And we don't think that our grant is going to be affected. Bureau staff does not think our grant is going to be affected, but nevertheless, they'll have to go through that review process when we get to that step.
Thank you.
Is there more on the presentation, or is that it?
There is, but any more general questions about the report?
I was remiss in not asking for public comment on this item, so.
Oh, yeah, we'll still have more presentation.
Okay.
I have some questions, but I'll wait till the presentation's over.
Okay, I'll kick it over to Dan Heimel. Dan Heimel is of Confluence Engineering Solutions, and he is the project manager for the Recycled Water Project.
Thanks, Greg. Members of the PWAB, happy to present two quarterly reports for the WRF program, specifically focused on the recycled water component. The first quarterly report covers the period of time from July to September 2024. The financial components of this report identify expenditures of approximately $100,000 during that quarter, bringing the current budget spent to date for the WRF program to $145.2 million of the $159 million that the city has budgeted for that program. And then really the meat of my presentation today would just be to focus on some of the highlights of the activities that were completed during the two quarters that we're reporting on. And we selected just a couple of them here for the presentation. There's more in your agenda packet. And so if there's any questions about the different ongoing activities, feel free to ask. So in Q1, what we're calling Q1, which is July to September, the key activities were initiation of, by the design engineer, of the injection well equipping and the recycled water pipelines that would convey water from the current terminus of what we call the IPR, indirect potable reuse recycled water line along the bike path to the injection well facilities. So we really kicked off that design effort over the summer. Also in that quarter, GSI Water Solutions was selected to provide the hydrogeologic design for that component. For the injection wells. We had a good discussion about the difference between engineering design and hydrogeologic design for well facilities, I believe at a PWAB and at a council meeting over the summer. There are both specialized technical services are required. Each has their own component of the work, and you can procure them together or separate, and for a couple of reasons the city chose to procure those services separately. Additionally, in that quarter, the project hydrogeologist completed a sieve analysis of some borings that were done in June. So one of the things that was completed, not in this quarter, but the previous quarter, is we did sonic core testing at the proposed injection well sites. That had really for two reasons. One of the primary reasons is the programmatic agreement that the EPA has with the State Historic Preservation Office requires pre-construction testing for archaeological resources. That was one of the reasons why we did it. It's hard to call one or the other primary. The other reason why we did it, it provided us an opportunity to collect lithologic or geologic data at the specific proposed sites for the injection wells. So we have the benefit of having an understanding of what the aquifer properties are at those sites now than when in traditional well design you make your best possible guess based on the lithological data you have from the surrounding area, and then you really find out what you got once you drill the initial test hole and you're in the midst of injection well construction. So provide significant benefits to the hydrogeologic design process and should save time on the construction side for the injection wells. And then finally, the project environmental team continued preparation of CEQA and NEPA documents. For the CEQA documents, the project requires an addendum to the EIR to account for changes in the locations of the injection wells. And then the NEPA document is a required federal environmental document that the Bureau of Reclamation is requiring before it authorizes the disbursement of the $9.3 million in Title 16 grant funds that Director Qualick described. And so that covers the first quarter. Would it be helpful to pause here or just get through both quarters and then open it up for questions? Okay, so second quarter highlights on the financial side, expenditures, as you can see, went up to $644,000. This really reflects the design effort getting fully underway. At this point, we've had the design engineer working on the project in earnest, as well as now the hydrogeologic design engineer is working as well. The other cost that contributed significantly to those expenditures was the archaeological costs associated with those sonic core testing that I referenced earlier. Those costs didn't come in through until Q2. This bumped the budget up to $145.9 million out of the $159 million that the city currently has budgeted for the project. Activities to highlight during this quarter is continued design from the design engineer with respect to the recycled water pipelines and the injection well equipping. The project archaeologist submitted the phase three archaeological testing report to the EPA. So that was the report that was prepared documenting the results of the archaeological testing that I described from the previous quarter. Those results were negative, which is positive for the program because it means there aren't archaeological resources at the proposed injection well sites and or the recycled water pipeline alignments. The city worked to getting an admin draft of the EIR addendum, an initial admin draft that it reviewed and commented. The project hydrogeologist also performed some HVSR, geophysical investigations. These are geophysics to help better improve the understanding of the groundwater basin where the program will be injecting. Specifically, these geophysical investigations help differentiate and determine the depth of the aquifer. So basically, how much of aquifer material we have in different areas before we hit bedrock, which is a useful parameter in designing the program. And then the city initiated what we call the interim injection test / tracer study for injection well number one. So this is a test to inject potable water. The city doesn't have the permit to inject recycled water yet. That's an ongoing initiative. But to inject potable water via injection well number one, which is located near the bike path, with an added tracer. So an added tracer is a chemical that you put in the water that's not present in the water that the city's injecting. It's not present in the groundwater basin and can be then monitored for within the basin and used to definitively calculate the time it takes for water to travel through the basin to nearby monitoring wells and or production wells. And the reason that the city initiated this is one of the biggest risk factors for these indirect potable reuse programs is getting sufficient travel time in the groundwater basin. The Division of Drinking Water requirements are that you have to have a minimum of 2 months of travel time in the basin from when you inject the water until you pull that water out of a potable drinking water well. And so this test was done to demonstrate that the facility, injection well number one, could get 2 months of travel time before reaching the extraction wells and then help provide confidence that when the project comes online with recycled water, that those travel time requirements will be met as well. So it was a kind of an insurance policy or risk mitigation strategy to do that test ahead of time before additional funding is spent on the construction of these recycled water facilities. And then finally, the city did a practice run of its advanced treatment system up at the Water Resources Center. This is in advance of a planned, I guess it's not technically scheduled yet, but it will, a planned Division of Drinking Water site visit / inspection that they will need to do as part of the permitting process for the project. And then just one more slide. We've presented this slide before. It's a way to try to help visually display all the different program components that are ongoing and interrelated. And I won't go through it all in detail, but what we're trying to show you here is, you know, the key initiatives or milestones associated with all the different disciplines that are required for the project. And so those primary discipline areas include hydrogeology, design, land use and permitting, regional water quality control board and DDW permitting, environmental review, biological, archaeological, and then I think surprisingly one of the most complicated is the funding and financing, juggling all of the different components and requirements of the funding and financing portfolio that the city has obtained for the project, which has been, you know, as we've presented in the past, very advantageous from a financial perspective, but there are some things that you have to do to meet the requirements of each of those loans and grants. So I'll stop there and see if there are any questions.
Yeah, I have a question. The diagram you showed there just a second ago, it's a flow. I see the arrows that tell you which way the path of each activity goes, and it looks like some of them are occurring concurrently. Is that true? And then do the arrows indicate where one activity has to finish before the next one starts, or are there multiple ways to see the flow happen concurrently?
Yeah, great question. You see there are a number of arrows. The green arrows predominantly are intended to show predecessor activities, so that, you know, certain activities can't initiate until certain predecessor activities have been completed. Many of these initiatives are moving in parallel, and so it's important to keep each one moving forward, and, you know, consequently your critical path is changing at different times depending on how each initiative is progressing. But yeah, it's one of the challenges with a large public works project like this in the coastal zone is there are a number of constraints that you're working within, both from a physical perspective, a regulatory perspective, a financial perspective, and a permitting perspective. Yeah.
Challenging. I had one other question, touching back on the groundwater flow that you've determined or are working to determine. How much does that change when the pumping is on versus when the pumping is off? The flow rate?
Yeah, great question. So, injection test tracer study that the city is performing currently is one injection well injecting about 80 gallons a minute, and then one extraction well extracting
about 200 gallons a minute.
And so the test results and the travel time associated with that is specific to those physical conditions. And so if you injected more, you would raise the gradient on the injection wheel field side, which would increase travel time. And or if you extracted more, you would lower the gradient on the extraction well field time, and that could increase travel times. So, you know, the primary factor affecting speed, well, that we can control is the gradient between injection and extraction. The one we can't control is the geologic properties of the basin in between those two points. And so this test, you know, while is helpful, it doesn't necessarily say that at 800, you know, acre feet per year and 900 of injection, 900 acre feet of extraction, that the travel times will be the same. You know, presumably they would be faster. This test has been ongoing for 4 months. So, you know, it's exceeded the 2-month minimum that was required for the test and is gone on an additional 4 months. We still have not seen the tracer at the extraction wells. So, you know, it's fitting the modeling that was done that said even at full build out, it would take over 4 months to get to the extraction well. And so, you know, it's providing very positive signs that, you know, we can achieve the travel times in the basin with these two wells. And so that is, you know, again, that risk mitigation factor that we thought would be beneficial to do now so that we have confidence in moving forward with construction of additional infrastructure to implement the program.
The aspect you presented where you said you had anticipated a time frame when you might see it, and you haven't gotten to that yet. That's good news?
That's good news, yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, in reality, you know, bad news would have been seeing it in less than 2 months or just a little over 2 months, you know, so.
What's the anticipated, or what did you guys calculate as far as a time frame of when you would see it?
So we didn't necessarily, if I recall, we didn't model this scenario, one well, injecting, one well, extracting. You know, we had the modeling around 8 wells injecting and 5 wells extracting, and that was from this location over 4 months. And so that was kind of our best guess, but we also thought that it would take longer because we are only using one injection well and one extraction well.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'm building your model.
Speaking to the mic.
I'm building your model. Did you also use data from older third parties that have drilled in that area, as well as maybe some old seismic data from Chevron or somebody? Or are you just relying on the new data from your drills?
Yeah, so one advantage I think that we had is there has been a lot of exploration in this, you know, what I would consider somewhat of a relatively small area. So the answer is yes. We leveraged the available historical data. You know, one nice thing about, you know, when you poke a hole in the ground and you log the sediments, those sediments don't change 40 years later. You know, they're still the same sediments there. So you can get old data and still have it be valuable for the analysis that you're trying to do. So yeah, the model was built off of all the available lithological data, borings, old wells that the city had for its extraction well field, that it had for the test borings and the wells that were completed as part of the seawater desal project. There were a number of borings associated, I believe, with the construction of the power plant that were able to be leveraged, and then a variety of other wells that have been drilled in and around the area. And so all of that, plus the new wells that were, you know, the new holes that were poked as part of the program went into the hydrogeologic analysis.
And with the engineering going on, when do you think we'll start seeing, like, maybe some of your downhole designs, some of the surface facility designs, you know, PNIDs, flow diagrams, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can give you an update kind of where the project team is at. The first primary deliverable from the engineering design team is the conceptual design report, which contains a lot of that information that you're describing. It's the conceptual design, and really it's they've included several conceptual design alternatives for the downhole equipment. They've got conceptual designs for the above ground mechanical piping and equipping. The hydrogeo team is working on their designs for the actual well infrastructure itself, you know, borehole sizing, casing sizing, screened intervals. And so I think it's in an admin draft form currently under review by city staff. And so I would coordinate with the city team to see when that could be brought forward to PWAB. But I can say that there's a lot of great detailed technical work that's being developed, that, you know, I think you'd appreciate seeing.
Yeah, I was wondering, because based off your report there, you're supposed to be going into construction like Q3?
Yeah, so the current estimate is that the design schedule is delayed by approximately 4 months. And so it is delayed. There's kind of two primary reasons for that. The first reason is the specific site locations for the wells have been challenging. If you've worked with well siting in really any area, but a congested area like we have here, there are a lot of constraints, and then you add on that it's an IPR program that add even more constraints. You need to be close to the wells, but not too close to the wells, because you got to meet travel time. You need to be 50 feet away from any water, sewer, storm drain. You need to be in an area with favorable hydrogeology. You need to be in an area that doesn't include sensitive environmental or archaeological resources. You need to be in an area where you can get access to the property that you want to put the facilities. And so the city has a number of these things, but there are some challenges associated with finding sites that fit all of that criteria. So that's part of it. And then the other part of it was, you know, we wanted to get the benefit of the interim injection test and tracer study to help inform the design. So we waited a month or two to kind of see how those results were going, see how the back flushing performed during the injection test. There were just some operational things that we wanted to gather data on that then would help inform the design. The design team has indicated that, you know, while they're 4 months behind their original schedule, the kind of the level of due diligence that's been done for this phase of design should hopefully cut off some time in the subsequent phases, you know, having gone through the detailed downhole piping alternatives and a number of those components should hopefully save time in the subsequent design phases.
So being 4 months later, is this going to be pushing our deadlines to ensure that we meet our timelines based on the state requirements?
Thank you for the question. The main deadline that we're rubbing up against is the SRF loan deadline of September 30, 2026. And we've already given a heads up to the state that, you know, there's a chance we might not hit the deadline. Surprisingly, they've been nothing but supportive and have even offered that if we need to, we can extend the deadline, potentially 6 months, maybe a little bit more. They were hesitant to say anything above a year. But there's also a few things going on there that work in our favor as well. So beyond extending the deadline, we could also just not spend their money after the deadline. So if we have other funding sources, we can continue the project as long as we're not asking for SRF money. So we don't think it's a large concern now. At this stage, unless we are projecting like a 2-year delay or something, that would be a cause for a pause. But we're not quite there yet.
Thank you.
These two reports together represent 6 months, and it seems, and we're almost at the end of now quarter three, so will we see these reports more frequently, like every quarter when they occur, rather than wait 6 months?
Thank you for the question. Yes, the goal would be to bring them after every quarter. They don't come immediately after the conclusion of a quarter because there's some financial data that needs to be processed. I do think we'll be able to prepare them more quickly than we have in the past because they are just 4 pages. So, for example, right now we are in quarter three. Quarter three ends on March 30th. I for sure we would have it to the PWAB in May. If we were having our regular meeting of the PWAB in April, we might even have it for that date, but that would be a tight turnaround because we meet the third Wednesday of the month, but that means we have to get our reports in the week prior, so it's really the second week, and that timeline typically the financials are not all in yet.
In these reports, they make mention of the agreements, test results, permits, other supporting reports. Are those reports available, like on the Morro Bay WRF diesel.com website?
Yeah, all completed reports, permits, I believe, should be available on the website. We've recently gone through an initiative to update the website and put up any reports that there was kind of a period of time where the website kind of lost its maintenance contract. So, but we have gone back through. I think we've gotten all of the reports for the EPA, all the PWAB reports, all the coastal development permit related special condition reports. I believe the NPDS and other sort of relevant facility reports are up there. There are a number of reports and things that are referenced in the activities that aren't there, but that's, you know, primarily because they're still in draft or admin draft form and being reviewed by the city staff, program team, and others.
The environmental documentation, like the biological report and the EIR addendum, is that going to be released for the public and for our board to see when that occurs?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the environmental documentation requires public release and review. So, yeah, that'll get released for the public, and then, you know, the city council for consideration, similar to the first addendum that was completed for the WARF program, EIR.
There's mention of the draft Title 22 engineering report. And as I recall, that was originally requested by the Division of Drinking Water when Eric Aceris was still with Corolla back in 2020. So who will finally be preparing that, and why has it taken so long to get it done? That's 5 years now in the making.
Yeah, so an admin draft of that engineering report has been completed. I don't know why DDW may have wanted it so long ago. I think my assumption would be that, you know, maybe they thought the schedule for the recycled water program was going to come forward more quickly than it did. You know, and my assessment is, you know, a lot of the focus was on delivery of the Water Resources Center and conveyance to meet this time schedule order, and consequently the recycled water component of the WARF program lagged a bit. The reality that the engineering report is a requirement of the GRIP permit, groundwater resource recovery permit, which is the permit that the city needs to inject recycled water for indirect potable reuse purposes. And so that is moving in parallel with the design effort and the environmental efforts referenced in the quarterly report. But I think currently, the latest schedule we talked with DDW is they would anticipate being able to review and approve that report by April or June of 2026.
So is Corolla still on task for doing that?
Corolla is, yeah, still leading that component. So if we saw the latest Corolla amendment back in June of, I believe it was 2024, they modified their scope. They removed a number of the program management components that they were working on, and their remaining scope really focuses on the delivery of that permit and funding and financing support.
In the contract with Canon, they mentioned different milestones, 60%, 90%. What percentage are they at right now with the injection well design and the recycled water pipeline? Are they at 60% yet?
No, they're not at 60%. You know, as we mentioned, they're approximately 4 months behind schedule currently. You know, if I had to put a number on it, I'd say maybe 30%.
Oh, okay. There was also mention of the abandoned diesel feed line pipeline. As I recall, wasn't that previously dismissed as an option to use? Are we still trying to utilize it?
I don't believe the program team ever dismissed that opportunity. You know, that if the city is able to reutilize that abandoned diesel feed pipeline, it could save a significant amount of money, and in construction and permitting, And so there's ongoing investigations. Cannon is coordinating with city staff to do physical investigations to further confirm the viability of reusing that pipeline. But no, as a program team, it was never taken off the table as an opportunity.
There's also mention of the pressure testing of the IPR line. Shouldn't that have been done by the contractor that put it in, Anvil? Shouldn't they have pressure tested that pipe? Isn't it in their contract to do?
Yeah, I don't recall pressure testing the IPR line. There's a potentially description of pressure testing of the abandoned desal line.
Will that IPR line eventually be disinfected before it's put into service?
Yes. So when the IPR line from the Water Resources Center to the pipeline, given the length of time that it has sat, it would need to be flushed, disinfected, back-teed to demonstrate that, it's clean.
And will you use potable drinking water to do those tests?
Would you need to use potable? I don't know. That's a great question. Something we asked DDW. I mean, if you're going to put advanced purified water in it anyway, and that will pass a back T test, I don't know why you couldn't use that to flush and disinfect.
Do we know how much water that might be?
Not off the top of my head.
No. You also mentioned the city's aquifer storage and recovery permit. Is that also on that website?
I don't know that permit is on the website. That's a good question. We can look into that.
There's also mention down at the Brackish Water Reverse Osmosis Facility, a nitrate analyzer. What is that?
You want to talk about that?
The nitrate analyzer, it's a nitrate probe that we use to test the water with. It's just a nitrate probe.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I got so many questions here. the program budget, the general project expense says over $24 million. What is that attributable to? That's a lot of money for general. Is that staff and consultants, $24 million?
Yeah, I don't know if this covers everything, but it includes program management costs. So that would be the costs that Corollo, and Confluence have incurred as program managers for the different components of the project. But it also includes a number of city-associated costs. And I don't know, employer-paid benefits, pension costs, workers' comp costs, city legal costs associated with the wharf project, which unfortunately I think has been significant, and then labor costs associated with city staff time working on the project since the beginning.
I believe there's also some acquisition costs with regards to easements and such.
Under the program funding, you talk about the WIFIA loans, but there were two separate loans, and the way they're written is that they're heavily weighted on the water portion, on the recycling portion, like 59%. So have we distinguished what components of the project have been paid for out of the 59% as opposed to the rest of the WIFIA loan? Has that been, is there two separate accounts? You know, there's one in the water enterprise fund, one in the sewer enterprise fund, and each one charged differently. The WIFIA was very heavy on the water recycling portion component, 59%.
So the staff that's present right now could probably take a stab at that answer, but I would not advise that we do. That would be more up Janine's alley. So that's an answer that we can get for the PWAB. Yeah, I know that we have different distributions based on the loan, and but I wouldn't want to quote any percentages here without that in front of me.
I mean, I think what we could say, though, is, in the future financial modeling that the city provides, to the EPA and is utilizing to help inform CFAC and council's decision with respect to the SRF amendment disbursements. It does take into account the breakdown of costs borrowed from WIFIA into the water and sewer fund. But we don't have the number historically of how that has been broken down.
There's mention here of the yearly reports. There's some also to regarding the one to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Was that completed and submitted by the January 21st, 2025 deadline? Because that's outside the two quarterly reports. Has that been done now?
Yeah, I believe all the annual report filing requirements for 2024 have been completed.
Okay.
They were submitted.
Then you mentioned that on October 10th, 2024, there was a practice run of the advanced treatment system. What improvements were identified? You say there's some identified improvements.
There was just some, like, small improvements as far as set points and stuff like that in there. So, he just went through sort of a checklist. Corolla was there, and he went through kind of a checklist that they'll go through with us, and they just want to see if this happens, that you get this reaction kind of thing. And so we went through stuff like that. So there were some set point changes, was from what I remember, mainly.
Okay. There's also mention of basis of design reports. They'll be continue to be updated as more hydrological data becomes available. There's been several basis of design reports through this project. So is this the one that's for groundwater injection monitoring and extraction that GSI did? Is that the basis of design report you're referencing?
Yeah, so that specific reference is to the hydrogeologic basis of design report.
I guess that's it for now. Thank you.
Okay. I don't have any questions. I think we'll open up for public comment on this item. Anybody in the audience wish to speak to this? Seeing as there are none, AGP, are there any public in the queue for commenting on this item?
There are no raised hands in the queue.
Yeah, any further discretion? I think we covered all our questions, correct?
Yes.
Director Qualick, do you have any questions of the board? All right, let's move on to item B2. Is there a presentation for this item?
There is. Thank you very much, and I'm very pleased to invite our engineering intern, Ryan Lutze, up, who put a lot of time and effort and work into the SSMP. And we also have Robbie Victor, who's our lead utility operator, who also put a lot of time and effort into this work. This is something that comes around once every 6 years now. So we'll let them get to it as soon as we pull up the freezer.
Hi, my name is Ryan Lutze. I'm an engineering intern with the City of Morro Bay, and I've been interning for about 6 months, and today I'm going to talk about our sewer system management plan recertification. And throughout the discussion, I'm going to refer to this management plan as SSMP. But first, I really just wanted to touch on the importance and why we're doing this. I mean, we just look around and we work and live in such a unique community and a unique ecological setting. But and yes, we're following the legal authority to implement the SSMP, but more than that, we care about the City of Morro Bay. We care about human health. We care about our sensitive species and our environment. And the SSMP is such a fundamental step in showing awareness and compliance and activism and environmental protection, not only for us, but for our future generations and our future community. And while 250 plus pages isn't fun, it's very important. And the SSMP is basically a large, comprehensive report detailing all aspects of the city's sewer system. And it focuses on activities such as operation, maintenance, spill response, and documentation. And while some might read the entire 250 plus pages, it's really better served as an all-encompassing document. And it's a one-stop shop. And by what I mean by that is that it's very easy to go in and search key terms, key processes, and there's even a big list of attachments at the back of the SSMP. So it's very helpful for staff and anyone else involved with a sewer system and collection to go in there and easily find what they need when they need it. And so this recertification of the SSMP is authorized by the State Water Resource Control Board, and it's authorized as a waste discharge requirement, and the Water Board gets this authority from the Clean Water Act. The first general order that really brought about the SSMP was adopted by the State Water Board in May of 2006, and I'm sure, as you know, a few years ago, the State Water Board adopted an updated general order, and that was in December of 2022. And so with that, there's a few main tasks involved. We have audits that are conducted by the city. They used to be conducted every 2 years. Now, with the latest general order, they're conducted every 3 years. We also have updates to the SSMP. The SSMP used to be updated every 5 years. Again, with the latest general order, now we're updating every 6 years. And the updates are required to be approved by the City Council. And so I think it's important to reference our last audit when going through and making the update that we did to the current SSMP. So our last audit that was adopted by the city was in 2021. And that audit, the audits, they go through the SSMP and they evaluate the effectiveness of the SSMP. And if there's anything major that's already known that needs to be updated, then those updates are made within the audit. Additionally, they set forth things to look for in the future for the next updates. So the next update after the audit of 2021 was this update. So I referred to the last audit, and the last audit was calling that we consider the water reclamation facility. That didn't come into operation until October 2022. That's why it wasn't in the last audit, but the last audit knew that it was coming about. So now we considered that. We also, the audit called that we plan for flow metering to identify any inflow and infiltration. We were also called to further develop our closed circuit television inspections program. And we were also called to make adjustments reporting our fats, oils, and grease inspections. And so those are now done in CityWorks, which is an asset management system that the city uses. And now the next following slides, I'm just going to talk about the big major updates that we actually made to the SSMP. First and foremost, the last SSMP, which was revised in 2019, it was very bulky and it was hard to read. Trust me, I read all 250 pages. So it was hard to read. So we wanted to make a document that was easier to read, more concise, and that's what we did. We removed a lot of unneeded information. We removed repetitive information. And if you look at the page counts between the 2019 SSMP and this current SSMP, you'll see that they only decreased by 2 pages. But when you account for the added requirements that the latest general order asked for, we really cut down on closer to 20 pages, which I think is pretty good, and it's much easier to read. I also here in this first bullet emphasize improved wording. The latest general order really wanted to emphasize that the SSMP is a living and working document. And so we added that wording throughout the chapters and elements, and we set forth plans for how we're gonna improve each of the elements through the upcoming audits and future updates. Looking at number two, we also updated contact information, personnel, and the municipal code references in the SSMP. As you know, staff has changed, roles have changed, and our Muni Code, Chapter 13.12, has also changed, and that chapter focuses on the sewer. So if we're going to effectively reference that, then we had to go in and make the needed changes. The general order also asked for an equipment inventory, so we worked with utility staff, and we got an inventory of notable pieces of equipment that we the city, have. The general order and the state water board also wanted to know some asset numbers and data relating to our sewer system. So those numbers included total lengths of our force mains, counts of our manholes and lamp holes. We also counted the lift stations and the total number of service laterals that we have. So those are all in the updated SSMP. Number four, we previously in the SSMP had an overflow emergency response plan, and the general order called that we update this to be a spill emergency response plan. And so we did that, and there were a lot of changes between the two. Most notably, now we have a nice set of steps for staff to follow when they respond to a spill event. I believe there's 13 clear steps that are identified. We also talk about the electronic reporting of our SSOs, sanitary sewer overflows, into CityWorks. Again, that's the asset management software. We also detailed the annual spill assessments in here, and we also provided wording for the appropriate agencies that we're going to report to during certain spill events. Skipping number five, looking at step six, part of that wording was that we need to actively report any spills in the bay to the Harbor Department as soon as they happen, being that the Harbor Department is the closest city department to the harbor and the bay. Number five, we previously had a fats, oils, and grease control plan, which the general order asked that we update to be a sewer pipe blockage control plan. And really, when you look at the contents that they were asking for, there really weren't too many changes that were made. But we did, again, update the Muni Code references in there, and those references detailed the city and the utility's authority to inspect laterals and private laterals. We also added some discussion about grease traps and interceptors, which are good source control measures for fats, oils, and grease. And we also identified and prioritized hotspots for fats, oils, and grease. And these were primarily the fish fry restaurants around the city and near the waterfront, as these produce a lot of fats, oils, and grease. We previously had three categories of spills that were defined by the State Water Board, and with the latest general order, they added a fourth category. And they defined category four spills as any spill that's less than 50 gallons that does not discharge to a surface water. So we simply went in, we added this definition throughout the SSMP, and with this, we updated the flowchart of spill categorization to include category four, and we also updated our chain of communication for spills to include category four spills. Lastly, the general order talked a lot about designating a legally responsible official, which we already had designated, but the latest general order just set a higher level and a tighter level of framework for this position. They want this position to be someone in a position of authority to be able to ensure compliance and to make managerial decisions related to sewer operations. And they also want this official to have appropriate education and experience. So even though I think I would do a great job, the Water Board doesn't want intern Ryan Lutzi calling the shots, but maybe later. But in the SSMP, we have identified that our lead utility operator and our utilities division manager both serve as our LROs. And this hasn't changed from the last SSMP. And so I want to thank you for your attention and involvement. And as I mentioned earlier, the SSMP is a living document, and this is a draft, and so now we would like to open this up and hear any comments and feedback that you may have.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. Thank you, Ryan, for that. That was good. How is an overflow spill or leak detected, especially if it's occurring during the night? How do you know something's happening?
Good question. We rely a lot on the public to notify us. For instance, this last weekend, we got notified of a public or a private lateral spill, and it came through our system. I believe PD got it and relayed the message to us. At night, again, we rely heavily on the public, so, and the police, you know, making the rounds at night. If they see something, they'll give us a call.
At the three lift stations and two pumping stations in town, are the flows into and out are metered so that we know how much flow is occurring at any given time?
That is correct.
If there is a discrepancy between what goes in and what comes out, is that a system trigger that tells you that there's possibly a leak or something that's not working at a lift station?
Yeah, so we do our rounds. We check our lift stations twice a week. We compare our flow rates from the previous inspection. We determine whether or not it made rain, if there was a high tourist weekend. We kind of know what flow to expect. We also know that if there is a shortage in flow at one station, that we start looking around for issues.
Is there a SCADA system that's in place, and where is that at?
Yeah, so we have a SCADA control that we can remotely access pretty much anywhere, anytime. We also have our control room at the WRC that we do a lot of control at, as far as pumping rates and our pump curves.
I don't know if this plan speaks of it or not, but do you do any practice drills for responding to a spill?
We do, yes. Recently, almost a year ago, the city of San Luis held a drill for surrounding neighbor cities and entities. So we do. We practice that, go over our estimations and response.
Have we ever had any really significant spills in the past?
Since I've been here, since 2008. We've had two force main breaks off of Quintana and a force main break Cloisters.
Okay, yeah, that one. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
I was going through your draft. On page 13, spill notification, a notification of spill. The spill from private lateral. The bottom box here, spill is voluntarily reported. Shouldn't that say will be reported? And it almost seems like it's the reporting structure needs to tie into the other categories.
So according to the general order, private lateral spills are on a voluntary basis, so they are not required for us to notify and report.
Are they supposed to be required?
It's discussed amongst the sewer people that probably in the next general order it will be required.
I just think it's kind of odd that it's that they basically may not be reporting it.
Correct, yeah. We, like I said, it's voluntary. If there is a private lateral spill and we are notified, we do do our own reporting in-house. We do track it. But again, we got to be notified. We're not always notified.
Next thing, page 19. You show the DMARC as being the tie-in at the sewer main. Most cities, it's at the property line.
Correct, yes. Our municipal code states that it's the connection is the responsibility of the property owner.
So if a city-owned tree gets into my sewer line, let's say, it'd still be my fault?
Yes, it would be the property owner that has to maintain integrity.
That's because of a city tree, let's say, across the street.
I would speculate that in that case, the owner of the property would be able to file a claim against the city to recover it. So it would still be your responsibility to fix, but whether or not there's any damages that are the responsibility of the city, that would be up to the claims process.
Okay. To me, the DMARC location should be the property line. Page 23. Underground service alerts, USAs. I've had some USAs done in front of my house between the city, the fiber company. On the sewer lines, they've always just mark the center line where the main sewer trunk is. They never mark the laterals. Is that normal?
Yes, again, because it is a private lateral up to the connection.
The reason is because when this town was running their pothole and road boring equipment, they were kind of setting up on top of my lateral. It would have been luckily, I was able to get them to move it a little bit. Page 23 and 24. On the lift station checks, I'm assuming these are your bi-weekly inspections. Do you have any OITs, operator interface terminals, at any of these sites, or is it all panel arms?
We have HMIs, the human machine interface.
Yeah. OITs. because there's no mention of it, you know, typically a lot of the OITs has like alarm loggers, you know, verification of that. So there's no real mention of that in here. Also, I'm surprised you're also using an auto dialer.
Yeah, so that was our main or our primary source of alarm to us. We have since, with the WRF project, added alarm system. So any kind of alarms that we get from lift stations, we're able to get dual alarms in case one fails.
Yeah, because I removed the last auto dialer out of our facilities like in 2008.
Yeah.
And so you're using something like 411 with your, I think you're using Wonderware up there at the water resources facility. On training, since I was an OQ evaluator, my last one of the many hats I used to wear at my company, some of these say recommended every 2 years, like Lotto's. I would say every year, find space entry every year. Are these particular timelines set by the state or?
Yeah, we do them every 2 years. Our insurance company, CJPIA, does a lot of those for us as well and recommends when we do them.
I would recommend increasing your frequency because these are pretty critical timelines to make sure everybody goes home safe. Like your fire extinguisher, it says offered annually. Does that mean is it required or not required? Your critical equipment inventory, that's, you know, what you have listed here is pretty lean. It covers like some of your mechanical and some rotating equipment. Probably, do you have like a complete list of your critical inventory spares?
It's, yes, we kind of have a running list of our, like it says here, our fittings, in case there's a main break. We should have all fittings and pipe available to make a repair. And any pump parts, we have a couple spare pumps for some lift stations, seals, impellers, and whatnot.
Well, what about for your control system, like spare processors, cards, backplanes, also your MCC equipment? Even your ASDs, do you have any spare inventory of that stuff?
We don't have spares of all of those things. We do have one particular person on staff that does take care of these things for us, but we don't have spare parts of everything on site, just for the cost of it.
Let's see. Now, on page 47. On your training, is it annual for your spill response training, or are you just? It's just whenever, or?
It will be annual. San Luis, they have a very well sought out way to do it with flow control and whatnot. So they will probably be notifying us soon for training again for emergency response. If not, we can always do it in-house.
Well, typically, when I was working for Pipeline, we always did in-house training with our partnerships with the other agencies, combination of tabletop as well as doing mock exercises in the field. It just, when you have a spill response, it goes a lot smoother if you train continuously. That's about it for me.
Robert?
I don't have any expertise.
I have a couple of questions. It seems like we have the biggest problem here with the fats, oils, and greases and the traps that trap product. How often are those inspected, and are they done staggered, or are they done throughout the year?
So we have a guy that does annual inspections to each industrial site and restaurant site.
Does he try to go through the whole city in one sweep, or does he?
It's throughout the year. So for, say, the month of April, he'll get a list of maybe 10. And then the next month, he'll get another list of 8. So we did stagger it, so we're not trying to do everybody January 1st.
So it, when you do the inspections, it would be my recommendation that you stagger those. And I'm sure there are certain players in the city who have, you know, consistent problems. They're always having their grease traps plugged up. So it would behoove us to check those more often, put those on a list of, you know, possible biannual inspections.
He does follow up when he has some that aren't getting theirs pumped out more often as they should, and or if they need to more often, he checks their records, make sure they do them as often as they need, and he'll follow up with them, make sure they do.
Okay. And this is a reference to the satellite collection systems in the state park and the high school. The dump stations, I'm not sure if there's one at the Dunes campground, but I know there's one at the Morro Bay campground. Is that monitored at all? What are people putting in those?
Yeah, he monitors those as well. There's a part of his inspections that he does.
And the state is and the school district are charged our sewer rates for dumping that effluent?
Correct.
Okay. Will the state review this draft, or will it review this after this is approved, and comment back on it and let us know if there's any discrepancies that they need?
So we turn it in to them, and if they comment and give us comments back, then we can respond to them. Presumably, yes, they review it, but we turned it into them.
But at some point, you expect a review and comments from the state on this?
Yeah, if they do. But a lot of times we've turned them in and we haven't gotten comments, so.
That's all I have.
I have one more question. Since this document was so easy reading, is it possible to get it earlier, because it seemed like it was kind of a push to try to get through some of it?
Thank you for the question. Do you mean that is your request that the PWAP has more time to review it?
Well, not at this point, but, you know, something in the future that's 250 plus pages.
We can do our best to provide larger documents in advance. The challenge is sometimes things are still being tweaked, and you know, we have our deadline to put the agenda out generally by Thursday. Sometimes we do by Friday. I think in this case we got it out on Thursday. I hope we did. So we'll look at that on a case-by-case basis. If there's something that's obviously, you know, a long read and we have it in advance, maybe we can release it first before we have the staff report. We typically don't like releasing reports before our staff report, because the staff report is intended to contextualize whatever it is that we're presenting. But short answer is yes, we can do that on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, I felt like I didn't have enough time. I've kind of rushed myself to get through it.
I have one question about the idea of it being a living document. Will it be revised or periodically updated, and will there be a process by which those revisions or updates are considered or reviewed by the PWAB and the council? Or, as it's stated, a living document, does that mean that it's available online to review periodically?
The SSMP is available online, and yeah, we update it with the audits. Those are every 3 years now, and then the big updates are every 6 years.
6 years.
And those are taken to city council.
Okay.
That's it for questions. We'll open this up to public comment. Any members of the audience wish to speak to this matter?
Good evening, everyone. I'm just going to, you had asked some questions about fog, and I'm somebody who participates in that inspection yearly over the 37 years of having a business in town, and I just want to share with you that be assured they are very thorough. We're notified when they're going to come to inspect. They inspect our grease traps. We keep a log that's required. They monitor the log of all the cleaning. They monitor where the greases are disposed of and what services you use. And they are phenomenal. They do a great program. And I think it makes a difference to the effects that it has in our lines. We certainly know that from other businesses in the restaurant industry around here that have that high flow of grease and what effects it can have. So I just want to do a shout out to the city team that does it. They are very thorough and do a great job.
Thank you, Mary Woodson. AGP, are there any comments? Anybody in the queue?
There are no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, we'll close public comment if there. Any further discussion among the board members? Okay, we'll move on to future agenda items. And I notice...
If I may, Chair Hill, so we are going to be taking this to the City Council for certification. If there's any comments that Public Works Advisory Board as a whole or as individual members would like to pass along to the City Council, we'd be happy to take those comments now. If there's any suggestions, we'd be happy to take those suggestions now before we go to City Council.
I think you got several suggestions from Derek. They were sort of interspersed with questions as well. It might be better if we submit those in writing to you.
That's a good suggestion, but I think it would be more appropriate to close the item during the public meeting. So if what I'm hearing is that, you know, we can review the suggestions that were made. In some cases, we may choose to implement them or make changes. In other cases, for reasons discussed during the meeting, we might not want to do that. Or we may have a recommendation against implementing those, and we can present that to the City Council as part of our item to them.
Personally, I don't see any reason why the city shouldn't certify this at the City Council level. So as far as I'm concerned, PWEB member, I think it's a fine document. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Just one thing. If you have a list of your critical inventory, I would attach it to your document.
Thank you.
Do you want a motion on this?
It's not necessary.
Okay. So we'll move on to future agenda items. I see on our agenda that we have capital project prioritization, which sort of came up in the last meeting. My question on that item is the list that you provided in February, is that what we're working from as far as your wish for prioritization?
It's a good question. Not necessarily. So we'll be putting together something that might look a little bit different from what we took to council. My sense is that it might be more effective if the staff brings a list of projects that are in play rather than a full list of 37 or whatever it is. Frankly, we won't have time to go through all of those projects to the level of detail that I think the board would expect. And so it might be, again, more effective to bring a few. We haven't worked all that out yet, but expect a more targeted version of that report. I don't think anyone needs to study what we took to the council.
Well, obviously, that's a big item. And I would hope that staff and yourself could provide us with some of your thoughts on priorities. We can certainly change that or comment on that. And if we can get something from staff regarding funding deadlines, things like that, safety issues, those are, you know, the two priorities I see. but there are, you know, obviously we have to have some sort of objective criteria to rate those things, because we're not going to be able to do all of that either cost-wise or time-wise. So we would appreciate, as a board, your input on that. Any other comments? Anybody like to add something to the future agenda? So I would assume that this capital improvement prioritization will not happen before our next meeting, which is only a couple of weeks away.
Yes, that's correct. So the next meeting is going to be a joint meeting with the Harbor Advisory Board. Because it's a special meeting, we'll only be talking about one item, and that's the study of the revetments and seawalls in our harbor. And staff has done a fantastic job of working with Brady Consultants to prepare that. And because we're having that meeting in April, we won't have our regular meeting, and then our next meeting will be in May. And it is possible that we'll have capital projects prioritization ready by then. And the reason for that is, of course, we could do it for next week if we were really needed to, but we have other competing priorities. Doing what you described, Chair, is possible, but just will take time. Yes, we want to provide you with the funding. We want to provide you with critical deadlines. When we took it to the City Council, it was more of a high-level item. And even though it didn't feel like it when we were at the council meeting, we were really providing high-level information. If we go to PWAB with it, I think you're going to expect more detailed info. So we may just choose, you know, 8 or 9 projects to look at. Or another approach would be we come to the PWAB and say, here's the 37 projects. Let's not go into detail. Which ones do you think are, like, on the table for talking about? And then we bring those back. So that might be another approach. But anyway, we can figure that out and bring you something, hopefully by May. If not May, then very likely June.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting. And like we've mentioned, our next meeting is on Thursday, April 3rd. It's a joint meeting with the Harbor Advisory Board. Thank you.
Thank you.